Dr. Tomosaku Kawasaki died in Japan this month at the age of 95. His name is linked to what was a mysterious disease in young children that he identified decades ago. Dr. Marion Mellish, who was the first to identify Kawasaki syndrome cases here in Hawaii, knew Dr. Kawasaki personally and recalled collaborating in those early days of research here in the islands.
He was a remarkable pediatrician, and he was basically a pediatrician at heart. He was a generalist when he started seeing patients with an illness that he had never seen before. He put the first couple of patients together in his brain as God only knows, but he kept his careful case note on the patients, and soon he had, over the next 6 years, he collected 48 more, and so wrote a paper in 1987 about the first 50 patients. The paper that he wrote was in the Japanese language. It was also illustrated with diagrams and charts and gave a very, very complete description of clinical Kawasaki disease that actually hasn't been equaled by anyone. And the criteria that he used and he defined are the ones that are used today to diagnose Kawasaki disease. From that point on, though, he had a quite remarkable personality and encouraged collaboration. And while he didn't start as a researcher, he established a research institute, and people joined him in studying this mysterious disease. He was always extremely open-minded. He was able to keep in mind clashing ideas from different people. He never got into the ego thing, which is actually, you know, often found in scientists who are often very competitive.
So when you started to see these mysterious cases here in Hawaii and you reached out to him?
His first paper was in Japanese, which I do not read, and it was in a very small local journal, I was completely unaware of that. But I started to see patients when, as a young doctor in my first real job, I started to see kids that were not in any textbook that I had ever seen. And I had a colleague who was a pathologist and another colleague who was a rheumatologist. And we independently put together 12 patients that had Kawasaki disease, or we didn't know what they had, and reported them at a medical meeting. And at that time, we also had the sort of accident of a visiting Japanese physician came to Kapi'olani, actually Kauiki'olani, our predecessor hospital for children. So it was showing pictures, and he said, "I've been showing these pictures on my tour across the United States in multiple children's hospitals, and no one has ever seen this disease, but this is a disease we're seeing in Japan." And when we saw the pictures, we said, "Oh, well, we have seen that disease, and in fact, we have one in the hospital right now." And so we took him to see our patient, and then he told us about Dr. Kawasaki. And I wrote to him. I had opportunity to have a translator here, so I wrote to him in Japanese and told him he didn't have to write to me back in English. So we became correspondents, and later, within a year or so, we met, and that was the beginning. But I independently identified with my colleagues the same characteristics of these patients that Dr. Kawasaki had identified. And as it turns out, we are the place in the world where Kawasaki disease is most common outside of Japan and Korea. So in our multi-ethnic population, Kawasaki disease is 15 times more common among people of Japanese and Korean ancestry than it is of people of unmixed European ancestry. We don't understand the new syndrome, but since I spoke with you last, a great deal has been learned about the new pediatric multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children. This has emerged for the first time in late March in Britain, France, and Italy, and there are now a clear picture from over 10 reported clinical series of over 221 cases that are now in the literature. When I spoke to you before, there was nothing in the medical literature, and we were dealing with news reports and alerts from health departments and sort of rumor. But now we know that this is a very severe illness. More than half of the patients actually present in only 4 days of illness already in shock with left ventricular heart failure, meaning that their heart is not capable of carrying out the needs of their bodies for them to survive. They need fluid intravenously, medications to keep their blood pressure up, and care in intensive care units. This is much more severe than the usual presentation of children with Kawasaki disease. In addition, they may have some features of Kawasaki disease, usually not the entire clinical picture, but often with red eyes, with red lips, with a rash. And the group that are infected are very different from usual Kawasaki patients. Their average age is 9 years, whereas the average age of children with Kawasaki disease is about 18 months.
It's just fascinating how much we've been able to learn in such a short time.
We learned this all in the month of May, and the disease is relatively uncommon. It sometimes has features of what had been called a viral infection of the heart or viral myocarditis. And of course, COVID is a virus. And the other interesting thing about this new multisystem inflammatory disease is that they have evidence of having had COVID, not necessarily. In fact, most do not still have a positive test, but they have evidence of antibodies. And they all started showing up in these hard-hit cities where most of the reports come from, New York, Paris, London, Northern Italy, about a month after the peak of the COVID in those cities, which suggests that rather than being caused directly by the virus damaging their systems and their hearts, it's what we call a post-infectious disease, or the response of their immune system is what is causing their damage.
Recently, the state indicated that we had a number of new positive cases, which have included children.
Yes, there has been one child ill enough to be hospitalized, and some of these new cases have occurred in family settings, as well as most recently in a convalescent home. So in the family setting, children have gotten COVID. Most of them have not been sick enough to be hospitalized. One has been, and that child responded well to treatment and did not progress. The group in New York was very clear that they had been seeing children admitted to the hospital, say February and March, that had predominantly a respiratory disease, which is what our most severely ill child had. So it's like the COVID expectations in adults. They come in with fever and shortness of breath. The inflammatory system associated with COVID has been different. It has very little lung involvement, predominantly heart involvement, and that has been why it has been so different and not really understood yet.
As our state and other states move to reopen schools, you know, hopefully we can find out more before school starts in August.
There's one thing that may be reassuring. So far in Asia, in Japan and Korea and in China, in places where there has been a lot of COVID, there has been no evidence of this pediatric inflammatory system in Asians. Another interesting thing about it in Europe and New York has been, once again, like Kawasaki, people of Caucasian ancestry appear to be at lowest risk, but the high-risk group for this inflammatory syndrome has been people of African ancestry, either Afro-Caribbean or African, as in France, and Afro-Caribbean in England and Afro-American in the United States. So like Kawasaki, there's a strong genetic association with ethnic background and ancestry, but it's not the same. So perhaps we would not see much of this inflammatory syndrome in a population that is primarily Asian and Pacific Islander. There's no evidence so far that children who had Kawasaki disease in the past are particularly susceptible to this new inflammatory syndrome when they encounter COVID. So I think that should be reassuring for parents here.
That was Dr. Marion Mellish, clinical physician at Kapi'olani Women's and Children's Hospital, specializing in infectious disease and pediatrics. She's also on the faculty at the University of Hawaii John A. Burns School of Medicine. Later in the hour, we will spotlight how a small school is preparing to welcome students back into the fall during these COVID times.